Episode of Turnbuckle Trash. You are currently on with Dr. Dave Denton, myself Zane, and the newest appointed federal director of athletic competition overseeing all of sports entertainment activities for the United States government, and that is the one, the only, the true heel, the MK Bandit.
Great introduction. Thank you.
So you got to tell us real quick, how did you get to be appointed as the federal director of athletic competition overseeing all sports entertainment activities?
Well, you know, the president of the United States is a pro wrestling fan. He, you know, he saw what I was doing and he called me up and I accepted the appointment. Well, yeah, that's the kayfabe story. The shoot story is this. Tommy Dreamer saw what I was doing. Invited me to a House of Hardcore show and pretty much came up with the character. My normal character is the evil attorney that screws people over. The character just kept growing and growing. I was only supposed to do two shows. Kept growing and growing and growing until, you know, I got a full-time gig with House of Hardcore.
I remember when you first started with Tommy Dreamer and the House of Hardcore, you'd put on your Facebook page how excited you were. And what was that experience to walk into that that arena that first time?
Well, it was intimidating. I mean, I had done only indie shows, you know, up until that. And my first show was actually in Freehold, New Jersey. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. And Tommy came up to me and said, go in the back. We'll talk to you later. We'll set something up for you. I said, okay, thank you, sir. You walk in there. There's pretty much, you know, the old ECW locker room plus some, you know, and that's pretty intimidating. So I just kept my head down and Tommy comes over to me and says, you know, here's what you're going to do. You're going to come out, you're going to say this, and then you're going to take a double drop kick from the Rock and Roll Express. Then Sandman's going to come out and beat the shit out of you with a cane. And so it was a dream come true. And I kind of knew that they were testing me because I knew that I had to prove my worth by not wimping out and getting the crap not kicked out of me. And I did. Sandman hit me so hard in the stomach, it broke. And then he kicked me through the ropes and I landed on my head. And I kind of staggered to the back. And one of the most wonderful gentlemen in the pro wrestling world, Bubba Ray Dudley, stood there, patted me on the back and said, way to earn your stripes, kid.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
Wow. I mean, it seems like on your social media, you're always going back and forth between PCW and Destiny Wrestling Organization and House of Hardcore.
Yep.
I mean, you've gone from little Salt Lake City to, I mean, you're traveling across the country now.
In pro wrestling, you can't be a 40 miler. You have to put yourself out there and you have to be willing to do whatever it takes to get noticed. And Frankie Kazarian in one of the seminars at Cauliflower Alley Club had said, you need to go to every town, work as many different federations, big, small, and do as many different things as you can, because eventually you're going to find your niche and then you're going to be able to tell people that I can do all of this. I've been working with Pacific Coast Wrestling. I weaseled my way into a position at FSW in Las Vegas, also with Mecca in Las Vegas. Still do stuff with Main Event in all over Texas. Picked up a gig now in Cleburne, Texas, the Rampage. Of course, House of Hardcore. And then there's a new federation starting up called Phoenix Championship Wrestling that I've been invited to. And so I literally just take the bookings, big, small. If you want me to come out, I can help your organization. I don't care if it's ring announcing, commentary, setting up the ring, tearing down the ring, heel manager, face manager. I don't care what I'm going to do for you. I guarantee if you book me, I will be at the very least an asset to your locker room. And I promise you I'll make the show better. Just with my attitude.
Royce Isaac, and I was watching one of the WWE shows just a few weeks ago.
If there is ever a time since the late 90s and the Monday Night Wars to be in professional wrestling, it's now. And I think finally the WWE has recognized that the heart and soul of professional wrestling is independent professional wrestling. You got to work the indies. All these guys, all of my fellow indie guys that are out there, they're the heart and soul of independent of professional wrestling in general.
I've seen a lot on social media and a lot in other places online, and people being extremely critical of NXT, saying that the WWE has created NXT to kill the indies.
Here's the way I see it. I've always likened professional wrestling to professional baseball. You have varying levels. So you've got the single A, the double A, the triple A, then you got the major leagues. And some people can go right out of college or high school, right in the major leagues. That's just their makeup. Other people have to work their way up. There wasn't an in between an indie guy working in 123 USA and then the WWE. There was no intermediate. There was no way for him to hone his craft to become a main event guy in the WWE. It was almost so. In my opinion, you're looking at NXT as like maybe the AAA. I think it's a good thing. I don't think that they're a diabolical group of people trying to kill the indies, because anybody who was brought up in professional wrestling in the past, and Triple H and these guys were, understands that you have to create something that's going to continue. NXT is basically like a farm system for the major leagues.
You have to learn your craft, don't you? And there's nothing like experience when it comes to professional sports and sports entertainment.
No, it's, even if you're a medical doctor, they don't just put a scalpel in your hand after school and throw you out there. You have a residency. You have to, and that's what I think it is. Do I know what it's like to be on Monday Night Raw? No. But if I were to ever go to NXT, I would have a sense of that, and I would add that to my tool bag.
It doesn't really matter whether it's the independents, whether it's WWE, whether it's TNA or Impact or whatever they call themselves today. What, from your point of view, are some of the things that you see backstage that fans take for granted or that the casual fan would never understand?
Well, what the biggest thing that opened my eyes up when I was, you talk about going to House of Hardcore, is the talent that isn't seen out there performing that is in the back, just as much a part of the show, such as the agents who age in the match, like, or the production personnel. Like, you'll have Matt Stryker isn't in front of the camera at all, but he's directing, he's directed many of the House of Hardcore, and this amount of talent that is in the back that you never even see is there. And these guys are big name guys that are back there talking to you, making sure that you're doing things right. I mean, you know, I got to say, I have been taught so much by Kenny and Mondo of the Squad. They would take me aside. Let's hear your promo. Tweak it here, tweak it there. None of the fans see that. None of the fans see how much everybody helps each other in the back.
For something like the House of Heart, far out do they go with their storylines and their booking?
Let me just start by something that was kind of told to me by J.J. Dillon. In another seminar in Colorado, because that every match has to tell a story, every show has to tell a story, and every run has to tell a story, and they all have to be coordinated. And that's professional wrestling. So for a company like Destiny Wrestling, we start in October, right after Day of Destiny, and we book to the next Day of Destiny. And of course we make tweaks, of course we do things, but we literally book a year out. House of Hardcore, I don't book it. I don't know Tommy Dreamer. Seems like he knows what he's doing 6-7 shows out. And the traditional way of doing it is figuring out what your money shows are and working backwards, meaning what are my money matchups, and then working backwards. And then, of course, there's always going to be a guy that gets hurt. There's something. But basically, your main storyline, your main event storyline is pretty consistent.
So when you talk about, like, money shows and stuff like that, you know, one that comes to my mind is when Rey Mysterio came to Salt Lake for with UCW Zero, and you were there. You had the opportunity to share the ring. What is the advantage of having a big name like Rey Mysterio come to Salt Lake, or what is the disadvantage, or is it only positive?
The idea of independent wrestling is to get your local guys over, get your local guys noticed. Now, if you have a series of shows with only local talent, the casual wrestling fan, the WWE fan, probably won't show up because they really don't care who MK is. I mean, honestly, let's just be honest. They don't know. They don't care. If we can put a Rey Mysterio on our show, people will show up and sit through the show just to see them. Then they will notice an MK and go, that guy's cool, I like him, or he's a jerk, I hate him, I'm going to cut. And then they'll get involved in the show, and then come to further shows because they had such a good time. So that when you show your next show, you're not paying thousands of dollars for a named talent. You just have your two main guys who they saw in hopes that these people had such a great time that they come. The disadvantages are there's two types of fans, wrestling fans and WWE fans. When that WWE fan mentality is, if I haven't seen them on TV, I don't want to see them. And so you throw out a name there, they come, and that's it. I've seen the guy that I came to see. I'm not spending any more money. I'd rather watch the WWE Network and not see live pro wrestling. That's the disadvantage. And it works if it's done right.
But I think that's the beauty of the smaller shows is you don't realize when they're really going to throw a curveball on you. And I think that's the great thing about the indies.
Well, and you, to be honest with you, you have a little bit more freedom because you don't have so much at stake. I mean, Destiny Wrestling doesn't have a contract with USA Network that if we make a mistake, and so, but so someone like Impact or WWE is not going to have a bunch of heel turns or swerves because if you're wrong, it could literally kill your product. And then in 3 months down the line, you lose a television contract. So the indies have more freedom to do that.
Well, I was just going to ask you about the people that are upcoming right now. You're working with so many of what I see on a limited basis. You work with so many people that have such tremendous upside. I mean,
really enjoyed in my career is I don't know if it was luck or fate or whatever, but I literally came up with most of these guys and, you know, went from working with these guys in 30 to 40 people venues to now working in House of Hardcore or Pacific Coast or PCW Ultra or things of that nature. And so it's really been awesome for me to see these people have so much success. For me, I was so excited to see Willie Mack become the Twitch TV champion. You know, like I said, I remember working with him at Cauliflower Alley Club where literally no one knew who he was. It's kind of like, you know, I liken it to when you start on a team and the team starts getting successful and as more and more people become successful on that team, it really means that we're all successful and the independent wrestling is successful.
You've managed Bully Ray and
yep.
and some pretty big names. So tell us a little bit about who you're working with now and who you think.
Tommy Dreamer put me with OVE. And I think the Crist brothers and Sami Callihan are just the most amazing talent. They're great guys. They get it. They understand the philosophy. They understand the psychology. They're wonderful guys in the back, and I really see a tremendous future for those guys. They are everything positive and nothing negative. I love Sami Callihan. I love working with OVE. Those guys, for one, Royce Isaacs and Terrell Nelson, the one percenters. Again, guys, tremendous upside. Big guys, muscular guys, look the part, understand how to use a manager. And then I've got a new group of guys. Called the Prophets of Destruction in Future Stars of Wrestling in Las Vegas. On kind of a side note, that's what's kind of great about the position that Tommy Dreamer's put me in, is since I'm not really affiliated with any one group, I've got to work with Nick Aldis. I've got to work with Shane Douglas. I've got to work with Joey Mercury. I've got to work with all these guys, and sometimes all on the same show.
You have just really have worked with some really amazing people. That's got to make you really proud.
You know, it's humbling because, you know, I don't pick who I work with. I wish I've worked with a lot of good guys, a lot of good bookers that have given me the opportunity, you know, work with these wonderful guys. And I'm just happy to be a small part of their career. And honestly, I really feel like the door was cracked open. I snuck in and I keep waiting for someone to say, "Hey, you don't belong here. Get out of here."
Are you seeing a little bit more of that managerial role coming back now because you need that other person to maybe set up that storyline a little bit better?
I hope so. I mean, I honestly, you know, and this is not a rip on any one person I work with. So I want to say that to anybody that I work with, anybody that I'm going to work with, I'm not ripping on anybody. I'm just merely saying that because managers are such a specialty item, a lot of workers today are not brought up to use a manager. And so the role is kind of dying because people don't understand how to use me. In the old school matches, when they would tease the brass knuckles with a roll of quarters. And then at the end, the finish was, and so you would tease that the whole match. That's how you use a manager. You use him to get your heat. And then eventually he either kills the face or he gets killed himself and everybody cheers. People aren't using it like that. And I've been fortunate to work with a lot of good guys and good agents. Sin Bodhi is one who knows how to use a manager. But a lot of the indie guys that I get put with, not recently, but I haven't put with, don't understand, don't know how to use the manager. So I'm afraid it's a dying role. And what I'm hoping is that back in the day, managers were old workers, or not old workers, or workers that were injured or something like that, and they transitioned. And so they understood the game. And my fear is that because the role is dying, there's not a lot of indie workers that are going to understand what a manager does. So I'm kind of afraid I'm a dinosaur. I hope the role comes back, but I honestly think that...
I've searched all over the internet. I saw somebody, they said that the MK Bandit is the Paul Heyman of the indies. And I would imagine that's got to be something that's pretty cool to say that you are up on that league.
You know, to be just mentioned in the same name as Paul Heyman is amazing. But honestly, I am nowhere near a Paul Heyman. But honestly, I kind of fear when people say that it brings it's an insult to Paul Heyman.
No way, dude. No way. Absolutely not. I fit all this into your life.
You know, it's a tremendous amount of work. And that's the thing that you have to be. That's the thing that about managers today at the indies, saying there's a lot of indie managers out there that think, well, I can't train to be a professional wrestler, so I'm just going to put a funny hat on there, go out and swear a lot, and I'm going to get over. And that's how they get their heat. I am literally all day, every day, breaking down everyday lifetime situations and trying to turn them into pro wrestling angles. I have to dedicate everything to pro wrestling, and the rest is detailed. And I mean, I'm at the gym almost every day working to look the part. I'm thinking about it. My engineering career, because it was there before, but in reality, I want to take pro wrestling to take over. I fit it in by force of will. It just has to be, because I won't be denied. I will succeed.
Now I want you to make sure that you get some KISS storylines involved in some of this, because you are the biggest KISS fan I have ever met, man. You love some KISS now.
And in fact, tomorrow night I'm going to Ace Frehley and Alice Cooper. But yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I think in terms of that all the time, about how would I take this situation and turn it into a pro wrestling angle. I mean, I watch SVU, Special Victims Unit, because there's bad guy attorneys, or I should say defense attorneys for the bad guys. I get a lot of my promos from their speeches. So when I see KISS and I see, you know, things like that happening, I'm literally constantly thinking, how can I work this in there? And maybe one day.
Well, I do have a Demon action figure from the old WCW days. So
that is so awesome. You know what was so weird about that is that could have worked. It was just, but if you really think about the way that they did that, how that they were originally going to come out with four different wrestlers. They were going to actually have a faction of KISS guys. Do you know what I mean? I don't think they gave it enough of a chance. I think they pulled the plug too soon. I wish we could have seen what that would have done if they had gone the full route and brought four guys out, each representing a member of KISS.
That's part of the entertainment business, is keeping your eyes open and trying to get that something that people are talking about and getting that into that entertainment outlook. And that's something I try to do on my radio show each and every day. So I'm really interested in seeing,
you know, Shakespeare for the masses. That's what pro wrestling is. And so pop culture really kind of has to drive what the masses see and pay attention to.
What's in the future for the MK Bandit, the one and only True Heel?
I really love what they're doing with me in House of Hardcore. You're going to see more of that. And as always, you know, as a character gets kind of played out, the character morphs. I mean, you know, I've been in House of Hardcore over a year now. And a year and a half ago, I would have never seen myself playing a government federal director guy. And so I kind of see things coming up. I see people with the mind like Tommy Dreamer picking up on what I can do for them and turning what I can do into something positive, because there's so many great minds out there. I mean, you know, Scott D'Amore, Wonderful guy, great mind for wrestling. You know, Tommy Dreamer, and they're out there making wrestling better at that level. And so I really hope that someone can notice what I'm doing and can kind of pick up on all of the repertoire I have and move me forward. And if that doesn't happen, well, I'm going to continue doing what I do best, and that's travel to a show and give my best effort and keeping pro wrestling alive and keeping the pro wrestling managers alive.
Well, sounds like you are really motivated and really have a drive and are very passionate.
It became when you really think about in the 90s, 80s, it was a phenomenon. It kind of fell on its butt in the early 90s, but then in the late 90s with the Monday Night Wars, it became acceptable to become a pro wrestling fan again. It became acceptable to sit at the water cooler and say, did you watch this last night? Nitro, Raw, blah, blah, blah. I think we're entering a time of that again. And so that's, I love pro wrestling so much that I can't wait for that to happen because everything's in cycles. And I really believe, like you said, a lot of pro wrestling people, you know, as many people that laugh at pro wrestling, every single person that you meet has a pro wrestling story or says, I remember when I used to do this. And so there's a lot of people out there that they may not say they're fans, but they are fans. And it's going to come back. And I mean, you know, the thing about me is I don't just do this. I live this. This is my life.
You know, even myself and Dave, you know, it's not super easy for us guys that don't live right in Salt Lake or right close to big metropolitan areas to go to some of these shows. But, you know, I've taken my 5-year-old and we've gone to some local shows in Salt Lake and we've made the drive up there. And I've met Dave, you know, in Salt Lake. And I think that I hope a lot more people will start to do that, that they'll see not just the WWE, but as professional wrestling as something fit into, you know, it's like everybody goes to a hockey game or everybody goes to a basketball game. Here, oh, I'm going to a professional wrestling match. I mean, I about get laughed out of the arena work and things like that when I say, yeah, I'm going to a professional wrestling match tonight, you know.
You know, here's the thing I want to say about professional wrestling that not a lot of people have figured out or understand. The overall message of professional wrestling is very positive. When you really look at all the negative things that are happening in sports and looking at what is happening now with Urban Meyer, you know, professional sports almost by nature are very negative and focus on the negative. Professional wrestling, the heel always gets his butt kicked. Good always overcomes the evil. I mean, it may take a long time, but at the end of the day, the overall point is to make the fans go home happy, always very positive, because the role models that we put out there as faces always are overcoming superhuman odds by nature of their pure goodness. That's the nature of how the face heel psychology is set up and why pro wrestling has been so popular and has been around for, you know, 100+ years. If people could see, you know, I would rather take my child to a pro wrestling match where the morals that I want my children to learn are actually coming to life in theater form right in front of my children. If they could see that's so much better than taking them to a movie that's so much negative or taking them to a professional sporting event where there's so much negative, I think more and more people will recognize how great professional wrestling really is.
I couldn't have said it better myself, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So glad you took the time out of your evening to come on the podcast. We've been trying to make this happen for a little while, and I know that you're super busy, and we're all – I just want to tell you thank you for taking the time to help a small podcast like us out, to help us grow and to help us do something that we enjoy.
Well, we're nothing without you. I mean, honestly, you are as much a part of professional wrestling as I am. Because without you guys promoting, without you guys talking about wrestling, we're not going to have John Cena's of the world get to where they are. You're not going to have me getting to where I'm going.
Thank you so much for joining us on Turnbuckle Trash. Thank you so much for joining us on Turnbuckle Trash.
Let me take just a minute to put over a couple of things I'm doing.
Sure.
You can get me on at the MK Bandit. Matthew Robles is my name on Facebook. But again, guys, I want to thank you for doing what you do, because your role is super important. Pro wrestling in general is a team, and really, I mean this from the heart. Thank you for allowing me to get on here and just talk like this, because I really enjoy it. And thank you for doing what you do and keeping pro wrestling alive.
And who else is joining us now?
You can call me Dr. Crapo.
Andrew Crapo.
Crapo.
Oh, shots fired already.
Hey.
My father says all the Crapos came across on a boat back in the day. And
just a floating pile of Crapo, right?
That's right.
You're full of Crapo today, aren't you?
We all met in West Valley City, Utah, to go to the wrestling event with the WWE. And was that your very first attempt at a live wrestling match, Andrew?
Yeah, indeed it was. That was my first experience.
If you were to label yourself, how would you describe your wrestling knowledge and experience?
I remember as a kid, I was quite involved in watching the wrestling. I had the old Hulk Hogan shirt I'd wear, and I'd run around and jump on my dad and pretend I was Hulk. Maybe the last 6 months, just kind of joking around with Zane on the social media and stuff, that's really got my attention into the wrestling again.
Well, I want to get your first impression.
The first thing I realized, just how much the crowd plays into it. They love their heroes or their villains. And so I really enjoyed seeing how everyone got involved, and there was a lot of play going back and forth. That was the first thing that stood out to me. You know, one thing that I really learned is that it's an art. There were gigantic guys diving, you know, in between the ropes, landing on top of people. Commit few eye-opening experiences, honestly.
How do you feel about people that make fun of wrestling fans?
I definitely see people who are on different sides of it. You know, there's the people who love it, and then the people who just seem to kind of laugh or scoff at the idea of it. Maybe it's predetermined who wins or what's going to happen, but there's definitely nothing fake about, you know, doing a backflip off three different ropes and then, you know, landing face down on someone. And I remember Zane looked over at me at one point during the show, and he says, "Remember, dude, it's all fake." And then some guy goes flying out of the ring or something. And wow, and it's all about, you know, the fans and the interactions and the show.
That is the, as you said, art of professional wrestling. And I like that word.
When Mankind took like 12 shots to the head or whatever, is that kind of a well-known moment in wrestling?
Yeah, that was the one from The Rock, when The Rock just kind of went a little bit bonkers on him.
Since then, there's been a lot of controversy and things, and the WWE stopped chair shots to the head. I think the last match that I remember a chair shot to the head was The Undertaker versus Triple H in WrestleMania. Was that 27? The Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez in WrestleMania 9, it says, is he gave him quite a few chair shots.
This chair's like mangled in half, dude. How do you – that's not acting, man. His head's denting this chair. That's just crazy to me.
You remember when at UCW Zero when we saw Andrew Sowell take a chair shot to the head? 100% for real.
Now in all sports, it's controversy that sells. And it is that trash talking that gets people, they like that trash talking more than they would like to realize, because it creates controversy, it creates tension, and it's a story. Right, Zane?
I think it was Trent Hunsaker commented on MK Bennett's post, and he said, "Everything's a work, and everybody that believes it is a mark."
I see people talking about how great the WWF was early 2000s, and then how much of a drastic change there is today. And it seems like there's even a little bit of disappointment from some people with where we are today as opposed to what we were. So,
well, the WWF is the WWE, but when they were as the WWF in the WrestleMania days, the World Wildlife Fund sued them and made them change their name to the WWE. So there's just a little bit of a history lesson. But when things kind of changed from the Attitude Era, the WWE was basically held by one family, the McMahon family. Then they went public and they had to start answering to a board of directors and to shareholders. So that's when that PG era started off, and that's what a lot of people are looking back, some of them very fondly, to the Attitude Era.
We always talk one thing on this show, Andrew, is that all things in this show are opinion based. You know, DX ripped off the NWO. The NWO.
Tell us how you really feel, Zane.
The NWO was a Eric Bischoff creation, and Eric Bischoff was a general manager for WCW, and he kind of was the brainchild behind WCW. Ted Turner gave Eric Bischoff a lot of control and a lot of things like that. And Eric Bischoff had done some time in Japan, and they had this faction, and a faction. You know, so Eric Bischoff brings this idea of the NWO, and it's Hulk Hogan and Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and they're this group of outsiders from the WWE that are taking over WCW and making, like, the early days of the NWO. Dave, you gotta agree with me on this. We're just too sweet, right?
Oh, they were incredible.
I mean, How far could they push the limit? You know, the Attitude Era, you know, that's what they call it, was how close to the envelope can you push it without being rated TVMA, risque? And D-Generation X, you know, they were the ones that were known, you know, the whole suck it thing, and they were just trying to be as provocative as possible. And as
the moment when Mick Foley fell off Hell in a Cell, good old JR, when he said, "Oh my God, they've killed him," he really thought that Mick was dead.
I watched that one too, and he was thrown off, lands on the table, but then he climbs back up. He throws him down on the roof, and the cage breaks, and he falls all the way to the ring, down to the ring.
The Austin 316 came at a pay-per-view event when Steve busted his lip wide open against Jake the Snake Roberts, had to go get stitched up, and he was being interviewed by Michael P.S. Hayes, and he said, "You got your Bible thumping going on right now," because Jake was professing to be a born-again Christian at the time. And he says, "But Austin 316 just says, I just kicked your ass." That was spur of the moment. The next night, Monday Night Raw, 316 signs were everywhere. If you'll remember back, and this involves Steve Austin and Mick Foley and Mr. McMahon. McMahon was in the hospital, and you've got Steve Austin stalking him. You've got Mick Foley trying to console Mr. McMahon, and he brings out the sock puppet that becomes named Mr. Socko. Spur-of-the-moment thing. They didn't think anything was going to come of it. The next night, people were wearing sock puppets on their hands, calling for Mr. Socko.
Some of my favorite moments were some of the live stuff that I've seen. You know, I was in Salt Lake City for Bill Goldberg's first match.
Lucky.
I guess first televised match. I don't know if he had any other ones besides that. Dave, you might know that. I don't know. And so that was something that,
you know, I was a part of history. I'd like to say I was a part of history on that one.
When we saw him come out of the back and those sparks fly, and he does that thing with his, you know, he sticks his tongue out, and, you know, and we're like, you know, I remember me and my brother were there with my dad, and we were like, my brother Chad was like, "Who is that guy? I've never seen anybody so big as him." You know, some of the other stuff, you know, we went to a WCW Thunder, and it was a dark match, and it was Bill Goldberg versus Hollywood Hogan. And so we got to see Bill Goldberg spear Hogan in a dark match after the television had gone off the air. And so, you know, some of those things like that are my personal. I mean, they're nothing like huge in history, like, you know, Undertaker chokeslam Mankind through Hell in a Cell. I mean, of course, that's everybody's one of their favorite moments in professional wrestling. And then, you know, when he says live, when Terry Funk comes running out and Undertaker's pacing, and he says, "Is he alive?" Or did he say, "Is he dead?" Then he picks Terry Funk up, chokeslams Terry Funk, right out of his shoes.
That's right.
No, it's those silly little moments like that that I kind of miss in professional wrestling that I hope are coming back more storytelling to, because it seems like some of the same stories are being told over and over and over again.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of the impression I get too, just kind of when I catch up with your guys' posts on Facebook and whatnot. It seems like they just kind of predicted, you know, what matchup they were going to see.
Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman.
There's the name.
Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar.
One wrestler that made probably the biggest impact, no pun intended, right, Dave, in professional wrestling. And, I mean, you're a fool to not say that Hulk Hogan is probably one of the largest and biggest stars ever in history. I mean, anybody that would disagree with that's got to be a fool, right, Dave?
I would agree, yes.
Just the name and the push they put behind him. And, you know, and he carried the WWF for a long time, and then he carried WCW for a long time.
And he was also in TNA for quite a while, too.
One of my favorite of all time was Sting.
So Dave, who do you have as the greatest wrestler of all time?
Well, I would agree with Zane on just the total impact on the sport, because he transcended all media. I mean, he basically changed the face of professional wrestling because of his size and because of his charisma. He was red hot before he got into the Rocky film. And then when he got into the WWF at the time and became the champ, WrestleMania came along, you couldn't go anywhere without seeing Hulk Hogan's face. So in that aspect, I would say Hulk Hogan, although I don't consider him the greatest performer of all time, I would give that one to none other than the Nature Boy Ric Flair, just because he could make anybody look good because he was such a consummate performer.
This question, I'll throw it right back in your lap.
Oh, man, I was trying to get out, weasel my way out of that one. Once again, to our listeners, I am new, and there's a lot to be learned, but I'm kind of caught in the moment here with Undertaker and some of his experiences in the 90s and the early 2000s and what he's been through and what do they call it, the streak?
It's not a bad option. The Undertaker is a very well seasoned veteran who has been around many, 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 many years, and who I don't know if he's ever put on. You know, the Undertaker is one of those guys that people get in the ring with him, and he just makes them look good. It's been fun to have a different, a little bit different direction than we usually go with the things. You know, usually it's just me and Dave talking about the same old things.
It's like
Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar again.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
You guys need to lighten it up, man. Get some variety.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Andrew, it has been good to get your take on that. And then some of these questions were...
Hopefully one of these days, Andrew, you'll understand. We say it on the program. I think it came from the MK Bandit, that there are wrestling fans and there are WWE fans. And I would like, me and Dave would like to have a few more wrestling fans in the world.
I'd be more than happy to join you guys to anything and to receive a little bit more education along the way. That would be great. On a parting note, remember, walk with Elias, slide with Titus.
This is TurnbuckleTrash.net.
And today on Trash Head Talk Back, we're going to talk to one of our trash heads out there right now, and Mike Calvin is joining us from North Carolina. Yeah, well, Mike, you were telling me a few minutes ago that you're a former Marine. Thank you for your service. We do appreciate that, and I just have my hat is off to you for serving our country like you did. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
You are a fan of professional wrestling, so when did you start watching the product?
Watching with my dad, it was the Memphis territory. Mm-hmm. Remember seeing actually, one of the events, I was able to go to was at the high school.
Do you remember anybody that you saw there that, you remember?
I want to say it was Dirty Dutch Mantel. I remember I still have his little gimmick picture, memorabilia. Actually, I still have that card, the Fabulous Ones, was real popular at the time. And so that was my team go-to. I love, kept watching them just to watch, you know, hoping to see them. Of course, I mean, I guess I could say I was the general fan of all the faces and then all the heels that, you know, I love to hate the heels. You know, I'm a big fan of Sting, hated Vader at the time when, you know, Sting and Vader had their matches, constantly hated Flair and the Horsemen for what they did, you know, to Sting. And, of course, I guess the Secret came out, and that didn't deter me from watching it. I just kind of loved to see, like, well, what are the angles they're going to go for? Mid-90s, you know, it was the Sting, Flair, the Steiners, big fan of the Steiners. I was actually able to start watching the WWF at the time, now WWE. I wasn't a big fan because, I mean, at the time, still Hogan was the big fan, you know, the big draw, which I'm not trying to take anything away from Hogan. I guess my view on him has changed as I got older. But, you know, when I was young, still remember eat your vitamins, say your prayers, and I liked it, but I didn't know any better at the time, I guess you can say. A lot of the creative, I guess you can say, I don't understand. I just don't understand it. I really don't. I mean, it's just logical. If you get all these wrestling fans, how can you just keep pushing certain people? And
that's probably one of the biggest frustrations I've talked to. The big one right now is the big push that Roman Reigns has gotten over the last few years, and he gets booed, he gets cheered, he gets booed, he gets cheered, and I think,
okay, don't get me wrong, don't hate me now.
I'm not gonna hate you now.
I do like Reigns, however, he just needs to be pushed a different way. After Plan B happened, I believe it should have been Roman instead of Seth, and I'm not taking anything away from Seth. Seth is an outstanding athlete, and I believe he would have been on top regardless of the push he would have got. But if Roman just would just turn heel, because I think there's sometimes you can't see his brilliance, and I'm not trying to give him all the credit. I'm just saying the promo where him and Brock, you know, Brock wasn't there, and, you know, he kind of threw Brock under the bus, you know, like, whoa, he just cares more about UFC.
Brock Lesnar is an entitled piece of crap who hides behind his contract. I mean, think about it, y'all. Think about it. We are 6 weeks from WrestleMania, and the Universal Champion is not here today. We were in Vegas last night. Brock was in Vegas. He wasn't at the Elimination Chamber. Guess where he was? He was running around the strip taking pictures with Dana White and the UFC on social media. You want to know why? Because he doesn't respect me. He doesn't respect any of you. And he doesn't respect anybody in that locker room. And I'm sick of it. We're all sick of it. They all know it back there. We all know it. Every single week, me and them boys run across this world and we bust our ass. And Brock just shows up whenever he wants to, when the money's right or the city's right. But we don't care. It doesn't matter how many people show up, how big the town is, I'll be there. Because I said I'll be there. And Brock and Paul, don't worry, they're going to come out here and say, we're businessmen. Well, guess what? I was born in this business. My family and my bloodline is this business. And I was taught at an early age that there's a fine line between business and respect. And I say this right now. I don't respect Brock Lesnar. And I damn sure don't fear that bitch.
That looked more real and that looked like, you know, believable versus him trying to go out there and get the cheers, you know.
Yeah, you and I are, we're right there, because I've said on the last couple of pods that I think that the way to get Roman Reigns over, which he's over now, but he's not over the top like he could be, is to turn him as a really bad heel for a year or two, and then try to turn him back maybe to more of a good guy babyface. I don't know if they were trying to make him another Rock or what, but there's been a little bit of a fan backlash. And if you look back at Dwayne's career, they started off with him with a face for a short time, and then when they brought him into the Nation of Domination and made him a heel, and that's when he took off. And I think basically the same thing could happen to Roman, but he doesn't have the same mic skills. I mean, he's not funny. He's not the kind of things that The Rock was, but
give him the Rock push where, like exactly what you just said, he was great as a heel with the Shield. He should have stayed heel. I did get to see one. It was a Monday Night Raw. It was in Phoenix, and then they did do a show in Yuma, which was the town I was in. I did get to go to that. So, I mean, I did have fun there.
It's just a different thing. I mean, you enjoy it on TV, but being at the matches live is just something different, isn't it, Mike?
Oh, it, by far. I had a blast.
I'm going to ask you first, a couple of favorite WWE wrestlers that...
Now I'm really going to get a lot of heat on this one.
Okay.
I think I'm one of the very few that actually like Brock.
Oh, just, Mike.
I'm sorry.
Mike.
No, he does not need the title if he's doing this part-time. It devalues the title. But I'm a fan of him because of what he's done as an athlete. He is a beast. Yeah. He is a big guy. You know, and no pun intended, we're calling him the beast. But he's just huge and very athletic. When he first came into WWE, he did have a lot more moves than just the Suplex City and, you know, F5. I think that's really much all he does other than his little ground and pound MMA. As an athlete, outside the box, he's amazing as far as that. I know he doesn't like the wrestling as for what it is. I know he's in it for the money. I just respect him as an athlete.
So for that aspect, I'll 100% agree with you. But, and then I'll agree with you also with the he doesn't need to have the title belt. I think that's where I'm just tired of his stick right now because, I mean, you expect to see the champion on TV, you know, and they don't have that. And their ratings are down. I mean,
a champion needs to be there to defend the title. I mean, that's what everybody's in for, the proverbial brass ring Vince always talks about.
Well, Mike, Calvin, thank you so much for joining us today. And once again, thank you for your service in the Marines. And you just keep spreading that word about the Turnbuckle Trash, okay?
Those were just some of the guests who joined us on Turnbuckle Trash during 2018. Hopefully, we'll have some more exciting guests for you coming up in 2019. But you've been waiting very patiently. Oh, how patient have you been? Because it's time for Butt Fumbles.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Wait for the signal. Wait for it. Let's go.
This is Turnbuckle Trash.
And I've already made a butt fumble. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I, Dave Dutton, the professional radio announcer that I am, I recorded an entire segment with the wrong microphone. I had
my wife was like, what an idiot.
two microphones plugged in. I thought I was using the correct microphone, and it sounded like I was standing about 20 feet away.
If you look up the in the dictionary of buyer, it says buyer's remorse. There's a picture of Dixie Carter
and a sweet black eye.
Every time, dude.
What's our show called? Okay.
Trash Buckle Turn.
The Miz and Mrs. Show yet?
I mean, it makes him look like a stripper, a gay stripper or something. I don't know. It's just,
Oh, jeez.
He is so out there.
Well, I've got my 10th degree in sushi, so if you like sushi, somebody likes sushi. I got to have the sushi.
And but, you like sushi like I like sushi.
There anyway. You go. There you
go. Whoopity freaking do.
Shane can't go 5 minutes without getting an inhaler. I can't understand.
Don't. No. 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 Nope. Nope.
But Shinsuke.
The ratings are so low right now, it's scraping the bottom of the barrel. Even Sesame Street has higher ratings than Broad.
I never said that.
They're at a therapy session. They're holding teddy bears and want to know and sucking their thumbs.
You just turned my headset off.
No, I didn't.
Okay, now I still can't.
This is squirrely, man.
You're squirrely.
I'm
going to give you a swirly in about 5 minutes if you don't quit touching my headset.
Not your headset. It's the pots.
Don't
here.
Touch that there. What are you doing?
Ooh,
stop it.
Ooh.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is getting off.
Agreed, 100%. See, Dave, without AJ on the podcast, we kind of should agree on something. Dividing us.
I'm going to tell. Oh, that's awesome. Awkward. Okay, 2-2-2-2. Let's try this again.
Still live?
Are you there?
We're still live, Dave.
Oh, no. Sorry about that. Forget that part.
We're pathetic. So.
Let's give them some pyro, huh? Yeah, yeah. On three. 1, 2, 3. Okay, it's our first show, so we're kind of working the kinks out still.
Did you not pay the pyro guy?
I swear to God, I did. Okay. One more time. On three. 1, 2, 3!